You are listening to TLRStation.com.
Your Family Matters is a talk radio program with expert information about family law issues and various dispute resolution practices and other services concerning the law and how it relates to your family. Because your family matters. Host Cindy Morin is a family law lawyer with Resolve Legal Group, a family law firm dedicated to client-centered holistic legal services with offices located downtown Calgary and downtown Cochrane, Alberta. And now, here is your host, Cindy Morin.
Good afternoon and welcome to Tenacious Living's radio talk show, Your Family Matters. My name is Cindy Morin and I'm a family law lawyer with Resolve Legal Group. Your Family Matters is a program brought to you, the listener, about all matters concerning the law and how it relates to your family because your family matters. Today, my guest is Kim Bush. She's a psychologist from the Calgary Counseling Center and she's here to talk to us today about sex and porn addiction in marriage. Thank you, Kim, so much for coming in today.
Thanks for inviting me.
Now, I think it's important when we're talking about sex and porn addiction that we identify and define what it means to have a sexual addiction or a porn addiction. So what factors would meet the definition of addiction?
Well, with sex and porn addiction, it's quite similar to any addiction. So there is the concept that you've got a problem from it. So it's not just because you do it, but it's causing a problem either in your family, your work, your functioning, something like that. Also, there's other efforts to stop that you haven't been able to. So trying repeatedly to stop the behavior, can't do it. That would be another sign that it's an addiction. Also, there's a level of tolerance that sometimes comes into things. So they have to up the ante, so to speak, either riskier behaviors, more involved behaviors, new images, if it's porn, things like that. Those are some of the things that really define what an addiction is.
And where's kind of the cutoff point between what is just a high sex drive or a healthy sexual appetite and exploration versus an actual addiction?
There's not a magic cutoff point, but again, it's really that dysfunction that it's causing in your life, especially if you're in a relationship and it's causing problems with your partner. That's going to be one of the big indicators. I'm not so hung up on the term addiction because I know some people get, you know, technically they aren't an addict or whatever. A lot of the people I see in my practice, they just have a real problem and they find it easier to just talk about a problem they're having. Once they get talking about it, they often will self-disclose that they feel like an addict, that they really can't stop. And it's that, you know, they can stop maybe for a few weeks, maybe even a month if there's a crisis, but then the draw to go back is so strong that they just can't resist.
And is there ever a normal use of porn or some of these, some more deviant sexual acts? Is there ever a normal use of that?
Yeah, I mean, you have to be careful about starting to judge what is deviant or not. You want to be able to make sure that everybody's preferences are honored. Again, it's when those things become something that is compulsive. Porn's a hot topic for people, right? Some people will say never, never, never. Some people will say yes. In a marriage situation, it can be helpful. And I don't know that it's helpful to start to really define that so much as it is to really talk about what's happening for you personally and what's causing you the problems.
And I know sometimes it, just within the boundaries of the relationship, while one partner may be okay with porn, the other partner may not be. So how does that dynamic work in terms of whether it's a problem for that couple or not?
Yeah, there has to be a real open communication about that. Oftentimes, partners, and I'm going to be sort of standardizing it with guys and women, guys being the porn addicts, women not. There are other variations on that. I've seen wives many times who say, well, I thought I could handle it. Yeah, I can handle it. And they can't. In the end, it just really becomes a real problem for them. The effects that it has on them are just too much for them to handle.
Right. And likewise, is it a problem then for the men to forego that for the sake of the relationship?
Again, a discussion you'd have to have in the marriage because, you know, if it's really causing problems, is it something you want to continue on with? Or is it something that you really want to make an effort to stop and to be able to have a better relationship because you've taken it out of the marriage? So there is no absolute in this, which is makes it difficult, right? So the absolute doesn't exist. But if it's a problem, it's something that really needs to be addressed.
And you were mentioning earlier that about the men being the porn users and the women not so much. Is it predominantly a male issue, or is there an equal concern for women?
Men are tend to be more of the porn users and the masturbating to pornography. That's their predominant thing, which can evolve into other things, such as chatting online, other things like that. But there's also other variations. Women tend to be more like love addicts, where they want that new relationship, the newness. They go after that love and that, if I have sex with them, I can find that love and that meaning. So it can take on various forms. We see in practice many more men than women coming in, for sure.
And how prevalent is this problem?
It's pretty prevalent. Now, overall, maybe 5% of the population, but that's a lot of people, right?
Right.
So in a city like ours, that's still maybe, you know, 50,000 people to 100,000 people, given this or that.
And do you find, like in your experience, since you've been practicing, has it kind of been on the rise with more online dating sites and that sort of thing?
I think what's really happened is once we got the internet and we got that really quick, so it started with the internet, quick access to porn. Before it was magazines, right? You had to go to the store, buy them, find your dad's stash, use it that way. Now you've got this really quick access with the internet. Now you combine that with a smartphone, and that becomes just crack cocaine for porn addicts. They can get what they want, when they want, how they want it, any time of day. They don't have to even plan it hardly. They just have to find a quiet place. So it becomes incredibly quick, easy, and simple to get their needs met.
And what are the ways in which the addiction manifests itself? So what I mean by that is it just internet porn? You said earlier that it can escalate. So what
sure.
do you mean by escalate?
So sometimes after people have been involved with porn for a long time, that's not good enough. So they might up it to interactive stuff online. Even sometimes just the act of paying for things makes it riskier for them, and so they like that, makes it a little more exciting. And also, you know, we talked about the tolerance. So if images become boring for them, the addict will look for new images that are more exciting. And sometimes it doesn't matter what the image is. It might not even be something they're really interested in, but it's just new, different, exciting. So it just depends where they happen to click that next phase. Then it can move to online chatting. I mean, we've heard about the Ashley Madison stuff that came out. A lot of those people just really want to go and have a quick hookup, right? They're looking for quick sex. There's no connection. Who's available in my area? It's all about sex. It's not about connection at all.
So let's say, you know, somebody not in a relationship. Is a sexual addiction detrimental just to an individual?
It can be, because what it does is, well, I'm going to speak specifically about pornography right now. People who have used pornography over a long period of time, they get sexualized inappropriately, especially if they started when they were very young. So they get exposed to a lot of sexual images that they don't know what to do with. They have no context for these things. And so you get a 10-year-old who's watching pornography, they have no context for that. Their idea of sex gets molded around the pornography. So real life stuff doesn't seem very exciting anymore. It's also a lot more work, and I talk to my clients a lot about this. Masturbating to pornography is no effort, really high, quick response. Real life interactions with people, much more effort, and it's not as high of a quick fix. It's a much longer plateau, in a sense. So, you know, if you have the choice between the two and you've been used to the quick fix, that's what you're going to pick.
And are people with sex and porn addictions ever able to still have healthy marriages?
Yes. I guess that's a loaded question in a sense. Often people that have sex addictions have challenges in their marriages. Sometimes they are brought up and sometimes they aren't. Once the sex addiction or the porn addiction comes out, often then the spouse goes, oh, that explains that. So a lot of times people will be withdrawn, not share as much. They also kind of separate intimacy and sexuality, as most of us have that paired together. But with an addict, sex comes very separately from intimacy. So you can love your wife, you can love your partner, but the porn and the masturbation is completely separate. So spouses will often say, well, if he loved me, he wouldn't do this. And he's like, no, I really do love you. But for them, sex is completely separate from that love and that intimacy. So it can start to warp things a bit.
So the impact that it would have on the individual's relationship with the spouse is, if I hear you correctly, it's kind of like a disconnect from the intimate relationship that they have with their partner.
Yeah. A lot of people will say, well, I've had a number of clients say to me, I don't know that I've ever actually made love. I've had sex, but I'm not sure if I've made love. And they kind of get this separation. And often spouses will say, yeah, there's this distance or a holding back, or it's just not quite right sometimes. Other times, though, they can say that they have really good sex and things are good. You know, it really depends on the couple.
So whenever I represent women who have been in this type of situation, the number one thing that they want to know is why. So why would he throw his entire family away over something like this? What would your response be to someone with that question?
It is really tough to stop this behavior if you've been doing it for a very long time. So if you think about it, if they started doing it, watching porn, masturbating at 10 years old, and you move forward, you know, 30 years, say, that's a long time to be involved in this. It takes a long time to stop that behavior and a lot of effort. Some people don't have the motivation enough, and I know that sounds horrible because people say, why they throw it away? It has to be more than just your spouse. It has to be internal. You have to really want to do it for yourself because it is hard work, and it's hard work over a long period of time.
So like with any addiction?
Absolutely.
It's almost like the addiction takes precedent over any relationship because you are addicted to that
thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So does this type of addiction impact the relationship an individual has with his or her children?
It can. Again, a lot of people that are addicted to porn are often isolating. So people like this are not just doing it casually, right? Clients will tell me they're spending sometimes up to 3 and 4 hours a night engaged in masturbating to pornography. Or they may, you know, not be engaging in things that they should be doing in favor of this. So it can pull people away from their families. It can cause that disconnect. And then in the situations where a child catches dad in the act or mom, it can be really hurtful to them and really shocking.
Right. In my practice as a family lawyer, I've seen on occasion where my clients, who are generally men, that have engaged in some form of pervasive sexual activity, their wives automatically assume that their children are now at risk of sexual abuse by their father. So in the absence of any factual evidence, are these, would you say, or overgeneralizations that the wife may have, or do you see pervasive sexual activity with adults cross over to involve their children?
No, in the short run. In the long run, it's not usual for someone to change their likes to something that they didn't already like. So somebody who's involved in pornography would not necessarily be at risk for molesting their children. Right. Even watching gay porn doesn't mean that someone is gay. It just might be the next thing that they've looked at.
That instant image,
yeah,
that new thing that you were talking about.
Right.
So they may not like it, but they go there.
Now, if there is a history of looking at child pornography, that's a different story where people really need to take a hard look at that. But if it's always been adult images, the chances of a child being molested are pretty small. But you have to really investigate that and have the hard conversations.
Yeah, because I have to tell you, in my practice, lots of times my guys who have engaged in pornographic activity or even chat rooms and whatnot, or have even engaged in sex with sex trade workers, their former partner, their immediate response is, oh my God, they're going to abuse the kids. And I mean, I can understand the fear, albeit an irrational one, but I agree with you. I think that they need to understand that they can't overgeneralize, that these people can, or these dads can very much love their children and even love their partner, as you say. But this is just an addiction that they have, and it's their own thing that's separate, and it doesn't mean that they're going to suddenly become pedophiles.
Exactly. But I would say that people do need to not just take it for granted. They should ask the hard questions.
Oh, for sure.
Make sure they get that information out on the table. And just know, because I've heard some people say, well, it's different because it's not my kids. You know, you have to be very careful about that stuff.
No, I'm talking about looking at adult porn.
Yeah, adult porn does not mean necessarily child pedophilia types.
And so how do allegations of sex and porn addiction affect children within a relationship? So what I'm talking about is when we do have a circumstance where somebody says, you know, this is the next step for him, he's going to bring this over to our children, and it's clearly not a situation of pedophilia, but just maybe a difference in values where the wife is against the porn, but the husband, you know, that's his thing. When the wife then says, you know, you've got these addictions and therefore you can't see the children, that, I mean, how much is being cautious and how much is too much where it's going to then have a negative impact on the children?
I think you have to be careful of expressing your fears or imposing your fears onto your children, because there is a devastating feeling that you know that happens with people who find out their partners are involved in this kind of thing. For most of them, that's why it's a problem. And then you have to be really careful not to just impose that on everybody else, the children included. There's a big difference also between small children and adult children.
Right.
Small children, you know, they don't need to know everything that's going on.
No.
Even adult children don't necessarily need to know what's going on unless they've found out somehow. And in both situations, it can be very devastating for the children. You have to be very careful how much you tell a small child. Adult children, again, whether it's shared or not, is very much up to that couple and or the situation that happens and how they're brought into it.
Well, and it's such a personal thing. So I think the person who has the addict or who engages in that activity, would you agree that that's the person that should really be in control of whether it gets disclosed or not to other people? And I mean, certainly never small children, but...
Yeah, and here's another fine line. You know, there's been a lot of secrets that have been held in most cases. This has been happening behind the scenes, a lot of secrets, a lot of lying that's gone on, which is part of the biggest thing that happens in relationships is the trust is broken. So, again, you don't want to be holding your partner's secret, but you also don't want to be blasting it to the world. And guys have to be very careful, and I'm going with the guy-girl thing in general. They have to be very careful who they share this with, because they'll either get shock and appall, horrible, or, well, that's just what guys do. And really, they need to be able to talk to people who are more supportive in the sense of, what do you need to do, and how can I support you in this, and if you want this to stop, I'm here to help you.
Yeah, because I think both of those reactions aren't really helpful, even if they say, oh, that's just something guys do.
Oh, no.
No, not to that degree. I don't think it is.
Correct.
But so should moms, and I'm using the term generally as well, should moms keep the kids away from dads who have a sexual addiction?
I don't see, unless there's an actual pedophile concern or an abuse concern.
Or exposing the kids to it.
Or exposing the kids to it, yes. Children should not be exposed to it in any way. Then I think you shouldn't have too many concerns about it. And really, if you start pulling the kids away from dad, it can be harsh for the kids as well as dad, and it's not going to help him want to recover and become the dad that he really should be.
Yeah. And what is the probability that a couple can move through something like this and save their relationship as opposed to separating?
There's really good, I've got a number of clients who have done some really great work. It takes two people willing to work on this, though. And that's the thing that's tough. Sometimes one party or the other can actually make more progress than the other. Not the addict sometimes makes more progress than the partner who's been really hurt and with some serious, you know, self-esteem issues, you know, all sorts of trust issues. But they also have work to do to help them move forward. And then the addict also has his work to do or her work to do. And so both sides of those need to be able to work together. It's a tough one because I know there's many people who would say just leave, but there's many reasons why people won't leave or can't leave, just like in other situations. And so if they're willing to work on it, yes, there can be some really good outcomes, but it does take two people.
And how treatable is this problem?
It's very treatable. Again, though, it is a lot of work.
As with any addiction.
As with any addiction, right? So it's a long, you have to be in it for the long haul. It's not a quick fix. Just because you're clean for 4 weeks does not mean that you've licked it and you're good and you're ready to go. It really means that's the start.
So should the relationship partner be a part of the recovery process?
They should be. However, they can't be involved in the addict's recovery itself, but they need to be involved in their own recovery or getting the help they need to deal with the emotions that they're dealing with. Because there is a lot of trauma, a lot of hurt that can happen for partners. Mm-hmm. So supporting but not being involved, because I know there are some clients that I've had where their partners want to be in the session, helping them all the way. If you can imagine, they have to talk about some pretty down and dirty stuff that's really hard to say in front of your partner.
And embarrassing.
Yeah. And embarrassing. There's a ton of shame that goes with this, too, for most clients.
So what red flags should a spouse pay attention to help determine if there's a concern that their loved one has a sex or porn addiction?
Well, I think if you're finding that somebody's lying to you, like a lot of unaccounted time, or there's a lot of time spent on the computer that you don't understand what's going on, if they're hiding away. I mean, it's kind of like an affair. They're having an affair with pornography or the other sex acts that they're involved in. So it's those same kind of red flags. Lying, unaccounted for time, hiding things. If nobody wants you to see their phone, you know, I know people get hung up on privacy, but if somebody wants to see your phone and you have nothing to hide, what's the problem?
Yeah. What kinds of supports or treatment is available for individuals and families affected by this type of addiction?
There are many more counselors, psychologists, social workers who have had training in sex addiction. I think it's important to find somebody who has had training in it, because I think I've seen a number of cases where they've just seen other people that don't understand it as well, and they'll blame it on the marriage, blame it on other things, which is really not helpful. It can actually cause more damage. So you want to find someone who really understands sex addiction, hopefully has had some training, and make sure that they really work with those people, both the female and the male, both parties.
And you have counselors at the Calgary Counseling Centre that do specialize in that area?
We do. There's three of us there that have the training to work with sex addicts that is really state-of-the-art from Patrick Carnes, who is the sort of leader in this area.
And because we know that addictions affect both partners and the family as a whole, how can the non-addict person in a relationship be supported through their fears that a partner may relapse and just kind of deal with some of the stuff that they're going through?
That's a tough one, because chances are there will be a relapse of sorts at some point. But they, you know, the partners really need to get as much help and support as the addict. They really need to have people around them who understand them, their own counselor, their own support system to help them. And this is hard, getting that open communication happening between the husband and the wife, because that's what's really tough and probably has been missing for quite some time.
Now, I've heard that sometimes if people engage in porn addiction for a very long time, it also affects their individual physical ability to have gratification. Is that true?
It is true. In fact, some of the new information coming out is that young boys, 16, 18-year-olds, are suffering with erectile dysfunction from masturbating pornography for extended periods of time. So yes, it does. And part of the recovery is getting back to healthy sexuality, even defining it, figuring out what that is. So it does have actual physical effects for these clients.
So thanks so much for all of this information. Is there any final thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners about sex and porn addiction?
I think just the fact that if you're concerned about it, really seek some help, because there are good people. And I know most of the time when clients come in, they'll say, this is so great to be able to actually talk about this for the first time in my life. And to somebody who understands it and isn't, shocked by it or making fun of it.
Or brushing it off.
So there is help, and really, seek it if you feel like you want to address this.
And everything is confidential when they see a counselor?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much for coming in today and being part of our show. If you want to find out more about Kim Bush or any of the other sex addiction counselors at the Calgary Counseling Center, you can give them a call at
403-265-4980.
Or if you want to just find out more about Kim Bush and her research or our firm, Resolve Legal Group, please visit our website at www.resolvelegalgroup.com or call us at 1-866-RESOLVE. And please be sure to tune in next week when we'll be speaking with social worker Evelyn Weatherspoon, who has dedicated her career to working with high-risk families and their children. And the topic of conversation will be infant mental health assessments and the impact they have on child custody matters.
Your Family Matters is sponsored by Resolve Legal Group, a family law firm dedicated to client-centered holistic legal services, with offices located downtown Calgary and downtown Cochrane, Alberta. The unique delivery of client-centered holistic services that Resolve Legal Group has become known for is structured to address not only a client's legal matter, but this model also ensures that families are bridged with differing community supports based on an individual's and family needs. It is the firm's philosophy that with the right supports in place, clients become empowered to make sound legal decisions when files are led to resolution. It is the firm's desire to continue to grow and expand this model so that holistic practice becomes the norm in family law rather than the exception. Contact us at 403-229-2365 or visit www.resolvelegalgroup.com for more information.